Ellen, you have a traditional background and credentials, yet you take such an interesting approach to money and prosperity. Can you share with us how you see the importance of combining the intuitive, creative part of money with the more practical and analytical side?
Sure. So, you know, we live in a material world, and certainly the financial services industry that I spend a lot of my time in is very much in the material world. It's a lot about analytics and numbers and projections and budgeting and cash flow. But we also live in this more ethereal world, more of a right brain world, which is about the things you can't see, goals and dreams and intuition. And, you know, what I realized after being an advisor for so long is that if you just have one side, like you're great on the material, the analytical, the more left brain things, maybe you've accumulated even a lot of wealth, but you're miserable and you come home at night and kick your dog and fight with your partner, like that's really no good. And then I've also seen people that are really rocking the right brain side of things, and they're great at visualization and their dreams and their goals. But what I also know for most people, if you're sitting on your meditation pillow chanting Om, waiting for the universe to provide, and you don't actually take any action in the real world, that doesn't really work either. And so what I've come to know over the years is that when you combine these two areas, the material and the ethereal, that's really where you can create amazing financial success for yourself. And that's really what makes this super fun for me, is being able to see what's been really successful for people and combine it in ways that make people feel really optimistic and excited about their money versus worried and scared, where a lot of people can sit often when it comes to talking about their money and their finances.
Mm-hmm. So I love your book, Picture Your Prosperity. Why did you feel there's a need for another financial book? There's so many that are out there. Why your book?
Yeah, there are like a ton of them out there, right? That's what our book agent said before we started talking to him. He's like, no more personal finance books. Here's what happens. Most of the personal finance books dig right into the minutiae of investing. Mm-hmm. And that's where most people go when they think about managing their money. But they don't take a step, but you don't take a step back and think about really what is it that you most want to achieve with your wealth. And my co-author Lisa and I really wanted to take a different approach to help you look at things in a broader perspective. So we really tried to balance the right brain, like creative visualization part of things with the practical, like how do you actually take action in these areas. And we also, our goal was to create a book that was fun and interesting, because even for me, who's, you know, deeply entrenched in personal finances, can find a lot of the books that are out there just big snoozes. So that was what our goal was, is to provide a book that is entertaining, interesting, and really helps people get into action with their money.
Yeah, it is really easy to go through the book. It's a very comfortable book to read. And I know when I went through it, I got so much from it. You approach some things from different perspectives that I had never thought of before, so I appreciated that. Now, you talk about a visual financial plan. Can you describe what you mean by that?
Yeah, sure. So most of us think in pictures, right? So you think about, when you think about your future, your past, there's usually pictures that come up in your mind's eye. And almost all financial plans are really numbers-based and charts and graphs. There's actually been studies done that only a third of people really understand how charts and graphs work, yet most financial advisors think a chart is a picture, and it's not. Mm-hmm. So there's really interesting brain research about how when we picture things in our mind's eye, how it actually makes a difference. So there's a book called Your Brain on Business by Dr. Srini Pillai, who has done MRI research and found that when you actually even, like, think about moving your arm, and you just think about raising it, you're actually stimulating the same part of your brain as when you actually raise your arm. And there's some really interesting implications about this, that if you can start to picture more of what you want to have happen in your life, it actually comes into being more, and you can train your brain to start to create what you most want for yourself. And it's not just like athletes do, right? If you think about the Olympics, there is a huge amount of visualization that went on with the athletes, right? Picturing themselves on that podium, getting gold, doing their routines perfectly. But it works for really any goal that you have, including your financial goals. So to start to develop a visual financial plan is a way to add more energy to your plan and hopefully have it show up in your life in a much quicker way and a much more meaningful way for you.
Okay, so you describe this quite well in your book. Can you kind of paint a picture as to what the prosperity picture looks like?
Sure. So the process starts with, some of you out there may be familiar with creating a vision board, and this is where you take images from magazines and you put them on poster board for inspiration. So it's similar to that in some ways. So you start with images that represent things that you most want in your life. Right in the book, there's 32 images, but you can take these from magazines or actual pictures that you have.
And on the internet now, all you have to do is search for something and a billion images pop up.
Exactly. So I want to go to Australia, so the Sydney Opera House. I Googled, and it's on my prosperity picture. So the idea behind this is to take these images, but to turn it into a prosperity picture or more of a visual financial plan, we've put a different kind of frame around it. So if you can imagine, if you took a piece of paper and laid it the long way, what's that called? Landscape?
Yep.
Yes, landscape. Not portrait, landscape way. And you drew a line down the middle and then a line down the other side. So you have four squares on it, four quadrants. Mm-hmm. The lower part of your board, your picture frame, would be for images that don't require much money. And the top part for images that require more money. And then on the left side of your frame would be for goals or images that you would like to see show up in your life in sooner, so maybe 5 years or less. And the right side for images you would like to see happen later. So, for example, on my prosperity picture, I have an image of an airplane in the upper right-hand box, and that represents taking a trip around the world for a year. Now, probably would happen later, and probably would take a decent amount of money to be able to do that. So that's why it's in that corner. And I also have the picture of an Om symbol. And that represents my meditation practice. And that I do now currently doesn't require any money. So that's an idea of where you can put things on your board. And then it's really going deeper with each of these images and starting to imagine them happening. I mean, if it would be helpful, I can give you an idea of like an actual walking you through a meditation to see how these images could really work.
Yeah, we could do that right now.
Great. Okay.
Yeah, so, okay, fantastic.
Yeah, so... So for each of you, think about in your mind's eye something you would like to have happen. So for example, maybe it's a picture in your mind's eye of a chair by a lake, and maybe that represents a lake home you would like to buy at some point. I usually, as I mentioned, have the Sydney Opera House because that represents my picture of being hired to speak in Australia, being paid a lot of money, and my husband coming along with me, and we having a wonderful vacation there. So that's on my board. So think for yourself what that image might be. What would be something you'd like to have? And you might want to even start with something super simple, like something you'd like to see show up in your life in the next 3 months, for example. Okay. Now just take in a deep, full breath. So maybe inhale through your nose and exhale slowly through your mouth. Inhale and exhale. And if you're in a place to do this, you can gently close your eyes and take in several more deep breaths. Inhale and exhale. And with each breath, you feel more and more relaxed. And now in your mind's eye, bring up that image, that dream, that goal that you want to see happen. And imagine that it's happening right now in this present moment. Put yourself in this picture, like a movie scene. So you're watching it, but you're actually also in this movie set. And just notice what's around you. Notice what the air feels like around you. What do you see? In as much detail as possible. Are there smells or aromas in the air? Are there other people there with you? If so, who's there? What are they saying to you? And what are you saying to them? And now actually feel what you'll feel like as this is happening. Where in your body do you feel this? What emotion or feeling are you experiencing? And actually feel that. Add any other details that you would like to this vision. And in a moment, you will come back from this. But before you do, just ask the question to yourself, what is your first next step to have this vision be a reality in your life? And when you're ready, you can slowly and gently open your eyes and bring your attention back to the current moment. You might want to take a moment now and just jot down what that image represented to you, what your next step is to bring this into reality. Maybe it's a person you should call or something you want to do research on. So we just spent just a couple minutes going through this visualization, yet it can be so incredibly powerful. You know, often we need to take action, and it's not just picturing something in our lives most often, but once in a while things just start to happen from taking that couple minutes just to picture what you want most and how that would play out. I had an experience where after I spoke at a conference, someone wrote me a letter, a handwritten letter, which was really awesome. And she told me the story about how she had brought a friend to the workshop, and her friend had said that her picture was to go to Paris for her 50th birthday. And so this woman wrote in her letter that she had actually downloaded some pictures of the Eiffel Tower and were sending them to her friend for her prosperity picture. And when she called her friend's office to find out if she got the images, the woman's secretary said, oh, she actually just left this morning to take a trip to Paris.
Perfect.
Perfect, right? So sometimes things happen super quickly. But this process is just so really lovely and beautiful, because what it does is tap into a different part of our brain than we typically tap into when we think about our personal finances. And it really digs down into what we most desire for ourselves and our family and our community in a much more beautiful way than just saying, when do you want to retire? How much are you going to save? Or those, you know, where do you want to send your kid to college? Like those typical questions that get asked.
So you recommend doing a visualization like this for each of the pictures on your prosperity picture and for each of your goals.
Yeah, it's really great. And then, and the fun thing is sometimes things will come up you didn't even know were goals. And, mm-hmm. you know, one of the images that Lisa King, my co-author's husband, picked was an image of, it was like a food image. And when he did the visualization, he realized he pictured himself in L.A., in the house that he's going to live in there. And Lisa's like, what are you talking about? We live in Chicago. Oh, cool. He goes, you know what? I always wanted to live in L.A. They had never talked about that before.
Yeah. So when you're doing the, first of all, did they ever move to L.A.?
No, but they're actually making some changes where they're figuring out how they can spend more time. Lisa travels all the time. Like, they can spend more time mm-hmm. in places that they really want to. And so that's the cool thing about starting to program your brain, because you start to see ways things can happen that aren't necessarily how you thought they were going to show up for you.
Yeah, and you know, another thing too, when you're doing a meditation like this, you do want to pay attention to everything that shows up in your visualization, just because that food might end up in Los Angeles.
That's right.
How often do you recommend that somebody does this kind of visualization for a particular picture or a particular goal?
So a couple of things. I mean, it can be every day. You know, like if there's something, so for example, if I have a big speaking engagement coming up, leading up to it, I'll picture that audience loving what I'm talking about, loving me, giving me a stand ovation, like everything I want to have happen exactly like I want it to. Mm-hmm. You know, the beautiful thing about having a prosperity picture is when you can put it up somewhere where you can see it every day, you're constantly, so mine is in my closet. So a couple of times a day, you know, when I open the door, I see this prosperity picture. So as I'm looking at it, even if I'm not super consciously focusing on those images are getting implanted in my brain, really. It's like exercising mm-hmm. your brain muscles, like exercising your biceps. It's bicep curls for mm-hmm. your brain. And then periodically, it's a matter of readjusting it. I just redid my prosperity picture because, quite honestly, a bunch of the things that were on there came to fruition. So I'm like, okay, next.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, you could also take a photograph of your prosperity picture and use it as your screensaver or as your background image on your computer.
That's a great idea. Fabulous.
So when you're doing these visualizations, and if you, with the visualization we just did, you can listen to that multiple times for every picture on your prosperity picture. But when you're doing it, have you found that there's an ideal length of time for the visualization? Is just, you know, like 30 seconds to a minute, is that good enough? Or should it be like 6 minutes, 10 minutes?
I think it depends on how much time you have to luxuriate in it. I don't want you to think mm-hmm. that you have to do it for 6 minutes or 18 minutes or 20 minutes. It can be 30 seconds. I mean, I know some of you out there picture getting a parking space, right? And then it's there for you. It can be that quick, or if you have time mm-hmm. to really put incredible details into it, it can be really awesome. I mean, every day after I finish I meditate every day for around 20 minutes, and I always spend time afterwards picturing my goals. Sometimes I spend more time, and sometimes I spend less.
Mm-hmm. So then you create your prosperity picture and you have it up in some place where you see it. Is there anything else that you do with it? Do you share it with other people? Do you keep it to yourself?
Well, if you have a partner that you do your money life with, it's a wonderful thing to share with your partner, because you can really learn about each other's goals. When I walk through this activity with my husband, he put the sailboat image on there. And he told me, oh, I've always wanted to go on a 2-week trip sailing. I'm like, really? I've been married 25 years, actually 28 years, and never knew that, right? And secretly hoping he means with friends, because I get seasick. But so it's really a wonderful thing to do. If you have a financial advisor that's really open to these ideas, like, what a wonderful way to share what's important to you with that person.
Yeah, but if this is something that is important for you, and if it's not something that your financial advisor is open to, should you even be working with that financial advisor?
I'm pausing because probably, you know what, you want a kind of relationship where you can share the things that are most important to you, for sure, because that's really what money is about. If you can't do what you most want to accomplish for yourself, your family, and your community with your money, then what's the point? It's not just about amassing wealth for no real reason. And to me, to come up with any kind of investment or financial planning strategy, if you don't know why, your why, then it's really much harder to do that. And I think that's one of the things that's been so helpful about this approach to people is they get their why. And once you know what that is, it's so much easier to actually start saving towards a goal that you have or really analyzing like, wow, what would it take? What would it take for me to take a year off and travel the world? Could I do that now? How do I start to plan for that? Is that something that's way down the road? You know, those are the kinds of conversations you can start to have when you know that you have something really compelling that you desire to create for yourself.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, Ellen, I know that your book is so much more than simply creating the prosperity picture. Can you talk about some of the top things people can do today to start reaching their financial goals?
Sure. So let's swing a little bit left brain for a second because we spent a lot of time on the right brain side with picturing your goals. Okay, so I'm going to tell you the thing. I've been a financial advisor for a really long time, and the thing that I found that my clients have in common that all are like right on track for their goals, the one thing that they all do, and it sounds painfully obvious, but they spend less than they earn. You know, most people out there are not going to win the lottery or inherit $1 billion or sell a business for $1 billion. Maybe that'll happen. That'll be awesome for you if it does, if that's what you desire. But for most people, it's really about creating a lifestyle where you are saving money. And it can be starting, you know, if some of you out there are listening, getting a stomach ache when I'm talking about this, like, yeah, I know I should be doing that, but I'm not. I mean, one of the things that we found that is really easy for you to be able to start to do this is to set up a savings plan on an automatic basis. So whether it's having money coming out of your paycheck going into a 401k plan or some other type of retirement plan, or money coming out of your checking account going either into savings or some kind of other investment, maybe a college education fund or some other kind of investment account, that, for most people, makes this whole process so much easier to do, is to set up your savings on an automatic basis. And part of doing that is really getting clear on what's flowing in and what's flowing out. Now, this isn't always the most fun exercise for people, but it's really valuable to know. And just to be really clear, I'm not talking about budgeting. I don't think budgets work. So some of you may be having a big smile on your face right now. Yay, the financial planner doesn't think budgets work. And it's not that you shouldn't know what's going on, but the problem with a budget, it's like the word diet. It's very restrictive. I've seen one person in 25 years actually stick to the kind of budget that's like, oh, I spent too much on clothes this month, so I'm spending less on food. I mean, no one does that. So a better thing to do is to really track what's flowing in, your income from all different sources, what's flowing out, your expenses, and then really analyzing your expenses to decide if they're things that you truly value. I mean, most people are very unconscious with their spending. They just do it. Can I share a quick story about someone who went through this process?
Yeah.
So there was a woman who was at one of our workshops who had never actually looked at her spending before and kind of got warmed up and said, okay, I'm going to sit down and look at what's flowing in and what's flowing out. And then she went through the process of setting A, B, and C priorities. Like, this is an expense I really value. It's an A. B is kind of, I like it, but not that important. And C is, like, I really don't care about this. And what she realized was she was spending a tremendous amount of money on her house. She was divorced and her kids were grown. She had this big house she didn't care about anymore. She had a mortgage on it. She actually ran up some credit card debt. She was working in a family business she hated. She was miserable. And she made a really big decision through this process. She's like, you know what? I don't even care about this house anymore and the real estate taxes and insurance and everything that goes along with having that house. She sold it. She cleared out a bunch of clutter. She downsized to a beautiful condo on Lake Michigan. Cut her expenses so much, paid off her credit card debt, she actually could leave this family business she hated to start her own smaller business. Happy. So that may seem like, well, that she's selling her house, that's not a good thing, but no, she was really being deliberate about what's most important to her. And it all stemmed from actually taking a realistic look at what was flowing in and what was flowing out.
And, you know, it comes a whole lot easier when you're doing stuff such as the visualizations or creating the prosperity picture, because then you start to see what's inconsistent with the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And for her, that big house, that the family business was inconsistent with the rest of her life. So all of it coming together, that's another reason that I really like the way what you did with your book here.
Thank you.
So, yeah, fantastic. Okay, so you talked about the, you know, she didn't like her job. What about what's going on in the world today, you know, with the economy and with the markets, you know, with the ups and downs, and you never really know what's going to be happening next? And how can you stay calm and not worry about money? And what can you recommend for folks?
Yeah, the markets are, you know, so volatile, and the news out there makes people even more anxious, right, about what's happening. So there's some things you can do to really feel more calm. And I just want to start this with by saying why that is so crucial. So there have been studies that have researched that when people are panicked about money issues, which can happen, you know, if you lose a job or if a sick child or something is really difficult in your financial situation, when people are in those types of incredible stress, your IQ actually drops. Mm-hmm. So you can't get yourself out of the hole when you're looking down and you're stressed about it. It becomes almost impossible. So self-calming strategies aren't just like this nice woo-woo way to be. It's actually a very solid, important financial strategy is to find a way to feel more relaxed. Okay, so I'm going to talk about a couple non-traditional financial strategies and one that's a little bit more traditional. I mentioned before that I'm a meditator. That is one of the most one of the best things I've done for my business, my personal life, and my personal finances. I start each day calm and clear. And since I started meditating, I don't know, about 11 years ago, my business just kept growing each and every year. And I, you know, it's not only because of that, but I know it's made a big difference. So everyone right now is listening, let's just all take in a deep breath and exhale. Just even a breath is a little mini meditation. It oxygenates your brain. It calms you down. It's so important with your money. So that's one thing. From a more tactical standpoint, setting up what some people call an emergency reserve. In the book, we call it a solutions fund. So a cushion of cash that's there for you if something, an opportunity shows up or some unexpected thing happens in your life, you're ready for it. It used to be the typical rule of thumb was 3 months of living expenses. This is where you really need to look at your own situation. Some people, now I think the conventional wisdom is maybe more like 6 months because the world's been a little more weird lately. But if you are someone who has more comfort with more cash, then maybe it's a lot more than that. And then there's some people that they see that, well, their cash isn't earning any money and it stresses them out to know there's a lot of money sitting in cash and they rather invest it. That's okay too. So this is where you really need to know your own comfort level and what makes sense for your own financial situation. And the last suggestion I want to give here is to really have a gratitude practice. Now, I know many of you know that gratitude is really a wonderful way to improve your health, reduce your stress levels. But there's actually some studies that have shown that people that are more grateful make more money. And, you know, if you just think of it logically, like who wants to work for someone who's a jerk, right? We'd rather work for someone who's appreciative and grateful. So those people tend to get promoted more. But it's another way when you are focusing on what's working in your life, what you're thankful for, it really helps reduce your stress so that you can start to see opportunities there to build more wealth and success for yourself.
Do you have an example of a good gratitude practice that somebody can follow?
Oh, yeah. So, well, a simple one is to at least once a day think about 5 things you're grateful for. You know, when our kids were little, we started this practice, and every night before they go to sleep, we'd share 5 things we were grateful for. And I really expected them, when we first started this, to say things like, oh, I'm grateful for my Nintendo, I'm grateful for my bicycle, like really material things. They never, ever, ever did that. They would say, really beautiful things, like I'm grateful for my teachers, I'm grateful for my friends, I'm grateful we're happy, healthy, and safe. One night when my son was in fifth grade, he said to me, "Mommy, I'm so grateful you and Daddy are so magnanimous and that our life is so fortuitous and that we live in such a utopia." And I looked at him and he said, "Oh, Mom, that's Mrs. Kramer's fifth grade spelling words this week."
Oh,
so
that's great.
That's a really easy practice. And maybe it's every time you go to a red light, you pause and say something you're grateful for. So it's a matter of finding ways to incorporate it in every single thing that you do.
Mm-hmm. So what about couples? You know, you mentioned earlier about sharing your prosperity picture with your spouse. How can couples use your book and your teachings to build a happy money partnership?
Yeah, so it's so important to build a happy money partnership, right? Because couples fight so much about money, and this is part of the reason I love doing this work, is because I hate to see people ruining relationships based on money issues. And it doesn't have to mm-hmm. be that way, right? So certainly creating a joint prosperity picture is a wonderful thing to do so that you get on the same page with your partner. What is it that you both most want to create together? You know, people get very busy in their lives. And
do you recommend like three prosperity pictures, one for one for the other, then one together, or just one together?
Three is wonderful because I think it's important to have your own goals, but mm-hmm. to have a joint one is really great. I see that a lot of times, especially if people have kids or really busy lives, it's hard to spend the time or make the time to really talk about what it is that you most want to achieve so you can get on the same page. And so joint prosperity picture is fabulous. And just, you know, like the story with my husband with the sailboat, you're going to learn things that maybe you didn't even know before by having a different kind of conversation around money.
Mm-hmm.
I think another really important thing to do is to check in and see if you're keeping any money secrets. A lot of times people have these, you know, whether it's shopping. I mean, I've heard stories of people paying cash for things so their partner won't know what they're buying, or hiding shopping bags in the back of a closet or a trunk. Or also, I've had people tell me that when their business has been bad and they've kept it a secret from their partner because they didn't want them to worry about it. And you can't build a healthy relationship with having money secrets out there. So I say come clean with your money secrets. And that's a truly important thing to do.
So Ellen, how often is one partner pretty much in the dark on their financial situation or completely defer to the other partner?
Well, I think it's natural to have one person be handling certain things because that's what they're really good at and their area of expertise, and someone else handling something else. So maybe one person pays the bills and one person's more interested in the investing side of things. But no one should ever really be in the dark for a bunch of reasons because you just don't know what's going to happen. So if one person has absolutely no money skills and the other person's handling everything, and something happens, God forbid, there's a divorce, there's a death, you're doing a huge disservice for the partner that's in the dark. And if you're the partner that's in the dark, you don't want to leave yourself like that. You don't have to be the person that handles everything about it, but you need to know what you own, what you owe. You need to know the passwords, how to get into things. There was a woman I was working with who her husband died very, very suddenly. And she knew what was going on, but he handled more things. She didn't know where the passwords were. She could not get information on some of his accounts for months till she went through the whole process of getting a death certificate. And so she didn't even know what was there because she couldn't get online access. So creating a list, creating an online file where everybody knows what to do if something happens to the other person is incredibly important. But it's okay to have delegation of duties too.
And going through the book together, it sounds like it'd be very, very good.
For sure. And it's a way to have those conversations.
So, Ellen, let's talk about charitable contributions and giving money away. Can giving actually make you rich?
Yes, giving can make you rich. I so love talking about this. So, you know, one of the best things people can do in addition to saving, is to have a disciplined giving strategy. And I'm talking more than just about volunteering, which is awesome. There's all sorts of studies on volunteerism that have shown that when people volunteer, they're healthier, they live longer. But what I want to talk about here is really about financial giving, charitable giving. So what I saw happen in the depths of the recession is that people were hanging on so tightly to what they had. So if you can imagine making a fist, like clenching on to what you have, and so afraid they wouldn't have enough that they stopped giving to charities that were important to them just when those charities needed their money more than ever. Mm-hmm. Now, you can't receive if your hands are clasped like this, or, you know, in a deep grip. Now, if your hands are always open, like giving, 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 sometimes people don't want to hang on to what they have. That doesn't work either. But it's not just this metaphysical concept of like, oh, when you give, it'll come back to you, although I do believe that. There's studies on charitable giving that have shown that when people give more, they actually make more money. Now, you might think, well, people give more when they have more money, and sometimes that's true. But one study showed that if you had two people with the exact same income, same part of the country, same education level, the difference was that one year one family gave $100 more than the other family, they found that the family that gave more actually ended up making more money. And if you think about countries that are more generous, like the United States, we have higher GDPs, gross domestic products. So it's a very important strategy. One of the best ways to do it, like I was suggesting for savings to set it up automatically, is you can do the same for a giving account. I recommend that you pick a percentage of your income and you take each week, month, pay period, quarter, whatever works for you, that percentage and put it in a separate account earmarked for giving. And really amazing things start to happen. First of all, personally, I know when we did this, it feels differently giving out of an account that's earmarked for giving than just writing a check out of your checkbook or charging it on your credit card. You've given that money in your mind already away. So when you're doling it out, it really feels like a gift. I found that once I started doing this, first of all, I started giving much more generous gifts. If I got a email for someone walking in a breast cancer walk or raising money for a certain charity, I found myself giving more, which felt great. And I found myself with the energy of wanting to give them a standing ovation for their good work and wowing them with my donation. Not to impress them, but just to, again, applaud the good work that they do. And I also found that my husband and I were able to make much more deliberate charitable contributions because we had this pool of money we knew what we had to give. A percentage is great because then as your income goes up, you can proportionately give more. And as your income, if it were to go down, you proportionately give less. So it's a super wonderful way to do that. It's allowed our family, because we've done that, to take volunteer vacations all over the world. If you give to, at least in the United States, if you give to a qualified charity, you get a tax deduction. But maybe that money is really used to help a family member in need or some other cause that's important to you. So whatever speaks to you. And what I know is if you save automatically and you give automatically and you picture your prosperity, these are three of the most important things you can do to boost success and prosperity in really every part of your life.
Excellent. That is very cool. Thank you. So, hey, Ellen, I know you have a very successful wealth management business. The last thing you needed to do was to write a book. So what drives you to speak and what drives you to write about money and prosperity?
Yeah, so I have my hidden secret agenda is I have a really big picture around this. So just in the United States, and if we're just starting with just women, in the next 20 years, $25 trillion is going to transfer into their control. It's closer to $59 million for people in this country. If we just take the trillion dollars. If we just take that number, $25 trillion, and just to give you an idea how big of a number that is, if you took that many dollar bills and laid them end to end, you could go from the earth to the sun and back 12 times. That's how big $25 trillion is. And if just 10% of that money were used for positive change, every child on the planet could be educated, every person fed, money for research for autism, Alzheimer's, and breast cancer could increase 1,000-fold. And there'd be a huge pool of money to keep these programs going for a really, really long time. And so what drives me is to get people past the worry of, am I going to be okay, to start asking, how much can I give?
Excellent. Ellen, thank you. Thank you very much for the conversation today. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I love your book. I bought a copy of it and sent it to my sister, so I'm sure that she's going to be enjoying it. And I wish you great success.
Oh, thank you so much. What a joy to be here with you today. Thank you.